Accession number 29047, Mr. Len Town End, Real 4. Now, any more stories of your time up there? Things that happened? I mean, I know you've got a story about being on guard. Much will hear that.
We do the guard one. Then there's another interesting story about flying boats that people don't know. So I'll tell you this. I was just on guard one night, and this car came up. I suppose it must have been the CO's car. I wouldn't know, but he came up. And I was, "Holt, who goes there?" "Who do you know who I am, lad?" "Holt, who goes there?" "Password." Then I got the biggest bollocking under the sun. But I will be absolutely fair. He sent probably next day, and he said, "Son, you were perfectly right. I was wrong."
That was fair enough.
He realised he was.
You were going to tell another story about the flying boats. We're very interested in the flying boats.
One of the things about flying boats people don't know, the flying boats go on water. How do you get them onto land? Right, it's what you fit to it, what is called a flotation gear. Now, what you do, this flotation gear, but on the Sunderland in particular, I mean, things like Catalina, that they come out on their own wheels. But underneath the wings are fitment points, and you've got these two big sets of wheels that fit on and go in there. And at the back, there's a trolley goes underneath, but bits under the tail, so you then can tow it out, and you've got three double sets of wheels to bring it out.
Now, they're called flotation gears.
Flotation gears.
They're wheels, but...
Yeah, well, it's flotation gear. They are themselves floated. You take them out into the water, and if they didn't float, they'd sink as you're taking them out there. You bring the Sunderland in. We talk about Sunderland. All the rest have a similar system, but Sunderland, you bring it in, you moor it on a docking bay, I think we used to call it, out in the water. And you go out to it in waders, you know, waterproof waders. Flotation gear is pulled out by the boats, and you have to fit this flotation gear to the Sunderland while it's still floating in the water. Then once you've got that on, you get this to come out, the tractor on, and you can pull it out. But of course, this sounds great, except for the fact that in Scotland, in the middle of winter, the bloody water's freezing. So, poor sods to get out there, no matter where you're absolutely frozen solid. And we get ashore, you get a good tot of rum. And those drunken bugger sisters, they used to volunteer for flotation gear service. It's a stupid thing, because it wasn't worth a tot of rum. But this is it. In summer, it's quite nice doing it, but if you've got to bring them ashore in winter, it is absolutely weird. Imagine just waterproof things on up to here, absolutely freezing. I just remember the cold now.
Anything else about your time there with them? Because you were there, you weren't there that long. Seem to have been there about 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah, well, I went twice again.
This is the first time. Anything else happened?
I'm just thinking, anything else that was of interest.
You've got some engines down. I don't know whether you want to comment on it. Pegasus, Merlin, Pratt & Whitney, Wasp, Popjoy, Niagara, never heard of it, 3. And the Cyclones, haven't
they? Well, the Niagara 3s were only short Scion.
The what, sorry?
The Niagara 3 engines were part of the short Scion. They're little radial engines. They're mini radial engines. The American one, because they use them for the Yanks have these little boats that go around their lakes. And it was ideal for this, so they used Niagara 3s.
Nothing special about the others, though?
No, nothing. Merlins, it's just Pratt & Whitney Twin Wasps, Peggy's.
All good engines?
Yeah, well, the Pratt & Whitney Twin Wasp made the Sunderland a good aeroplane. When it had Pegasus, the Pegasus engines, it was totally underpowered. It was just four little engines, really. It was just... struggle, but then they put the Pratt & Whitney in, that was almost double the power, so you had a very mighty aeroplane, really could go. And this, of course, is because of this changing of engines, like this is one of the things we were doing to get the range to how far they could go, and they were good.
Now, you're enjoying your work there from the sound.
I enjoyed that, yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about before you go to Halton?
Just thinking about anything there now. I'll tell you another one. Again, it's just a stupid story. I remember all these stupid things.
All right.
But he used to go out every morning. He used to have to go on parade. Right. It was in wartime, in the wilds of Scotland, you had to go on parade. You had this parade, which you marched on with a... Because we were in Scotland, we had a pipe band. In the wilds of Scotland, you see, it was, you had to have a pipe band, so we had this pipe band. And they used to force idiots like me to play the bagpipes. Well, of course, I couldn't play the bagpipes, but from what I could gather, and I know nothing about it, is that you can be a drone, which I used to have to blow down this bloody thing and become a drone. That was the one thing that I did. Yeah, but anyway, just a stupid little bit. But the other thing that happened to me up there that was really dreadful, when you went on the parade, in the Air Force, you always take your mugs and iron, you know, your teacup and your knife and fork with you, goes everywhere with you, you don't eat without them. And before you went in this parade, of course, you weren't allowed to take the parade on, so we had a big old-fashioned cabinet, because it was in a house called Inchalloch, an old Scottish house. It's a hotel now, actually. I've been there lately. And this had this great big Welsh dresser type thing, so everybody used to put their mugs in there. You see, and as it comes back off of it. And me, being a clever sod, had put mine high up so nobody would pinch it, climbed up to flipping get it, and I pulled the bloody lock down. Crash! All the mugs go out. Bloody idiot again. I kept getting bad reputations like that.
Now, what were the kind of, where were you? Tell us a bit about the living conditions, because where were you? I forgot to ask. Where were you?
Well,
in Ellensburg, but where? What
in actual fact, I was stationed in the village of Rue.
R-I-U-E. And what was your accommodation like there?
It was all the hotels there. We had the billeted in hotels looked after by the RAF. And that was it. I was in one called Inchalloch. In fact, I went up to Scotland a couple of years ago. I went there. The hotel is still there.
And was it comfortable? I mean,
it was awful because there was no heating. I went into Inchalloch a few years ago, I said about 6-7 years ago, and I was amazed at how luxurious it looked. But it was still there the same, but there's these total marble type stairs, absolutely luxurious. But there was no furniture in the rooms, there was no furniture anywhere, there was no carpets on the floor. All there were Air Force beds, and you had your blankets. But there was no heating. I was all through winter. So, that was it. No heating at all.
Yes. So, what happened next then? What's your next posting? It looks like you go to Halton.
Yes, I went to the aircraft fitters course. I mean, fitters course then.
What is that? That's a school of...
Number one school of technical training. It's where all the apprentices are trained.
It's the original Halton.
Yeah, it's the original Mr. Trenchard's Halton. And there's still a load of... they're called brats to us. All the apprentices are brats. So the brats were on one side of the square and we were on the other side.
And so you were there... Well, 4 months.
Yeah,
well, December to March 44.
Yeah, that's it.
December 43 to March 44.
That was
now,
just...
Tell me about that. What was it like at Halton?
I didn't like Halton. Halton was... It was a lot of very, very strong discipline at Halton. Unnecessary. And I wasn't used to it in the Air Force. In the Air Force, there was not strong discipline. It's not like the Army. Certain facets of it, certain facets you've got to do. But Halton was... The apprentice training school, and the CEO of that camp wanted to be an apprentice training school. They still had apprentices there. And
what sort of discipline did you not like?
Oh, lights went out exactly the same right time. You had to march to work. You couldn't walk to work. You had to go in parade and march all the way down. And if you missed the parade, if you missed it in the morning, you're in dead trouble. If you were late out of class or something like that, because you had to wait until you get enough people there to march up in a group. All the way up, there was, you know, absolute discipline. Everything had to be done right. You had kit inspections. It had to be just like Army style, which was not for the Air Force in my day. So it was just that there was so much stronger discipline and the food was awful. Absolutely.
Yeah. Why was it rubbish. You said the RAF food's good.
Yeah, but not at Halton. I think it's part of the tradition.
Now, what was wrong with it? What made it so much worse?
Oh, it is just poorly cooked. Very little of it. Oh, it was just bad food, isn't it? I mean, I was easily pleased with food. It didn't worry me too much. But very little, you know. Not very good at all. Cooks were lousy. I'm sure, well, I'm saying, I'm sure a lot of them were nicking it, but that's beside the point. Yeah.
Now, tell me about what you were really there for, is your fittest course.
Fittest course, which was basically exactly the same as the flight mechanics course, only to a high degree. To a different level, we were taught a lot deeper. We really went all the way through the same sort of thing again. Just
in more detail.
Yes, well, and I think it lasted longer, did it? I wouldn't be sure about that.
It's about 3 or 4 months from the looks of things.
Yeah.
About the same.
But as I say, it concentrated on a lot more things. You used to take the engines apart to a deeper degree, which, again, being honest, is a total load of rubbish, because you never took engines apart in the Air Force unless you went to an MU. And very few people went to MUs to do that.
Now, you mentioned the Merlins and the Hercules. There anything?
No, that was just the two engines that I worked on. The only other engine that was being done there, if you didn't get the Merlin, you got the Allison, which was the American inline engine. That it was just a case.
Did you find the training repetitive? Because I know it was in more detail, but it is going over the same syllabus from the looks of it.
Yeah, it was. It was repetitive, but at least they taught you a lot more about things. You did learn more about it, obviously, but I can't remember.
Were you still enjoying the technical side of it?
Yeah. I didn't like Halton. I didn't like Halton at all. I would rather have been back out again. But it meant I was going up a grade, so I got more pay.
what's your AC1 when you come out?
Yeah.
It looks like your AC1 before.
Yeah, and that was a rank.
Right.
But the grade was... there was a fitter instead of a mechanic.
Of course. Sorry, I'm missing...
Oh, no, it's all right.
Not understanding the RAF structure there.
No.
So you're now a fitter.
Yeah.
And you go back to the
main. Straight back to Annesborough, doing exactly the same thing as I did when I was a flight mechanic.
No difference at all.
No difference at all. There was no... No difference. No.
Now, anything happening this second thing? It adds a Catalina to it. Perhaps might talk about the Catalina. But is there any stories of this second period as a fitter there? Again, you were there. Not quite sure how long you were there.
I just resumed exactly the same as what before. You know, when I went back. It was just a break from the place. I went back and did exactly the same job.
So you went back from March 44 to September 44.
Yeah.
And any particular instance? No, nothing.
No.
That comes to mind. No. What about these Catalina? Sorry.
The only incident was I went absent without leave because I went with my girlfriend.
We're always interested in them stories because people don't often tell us. Tell us, why did you go AWOL?
Well, let's put it like this. What happened is, I've mentioned that this aircraft crashed, and it was during this period that it crashed and the guy was killed. And I went on leave, and I can always remember the time I went missing. It was the 4th of the 4th of the 44th, obviously. And I went on leave, came back down, and halfway through the leave I got a notice to go back, right? Now, I was totally convinced that I was going overseas. And the war was on, that's it. So I wanted to go see my girlfriend, who had then, she was now in the ATS at Harrogate. So I nipped off up to Harrogate and saw her for 2 or 3 days, and then finally went back. Unfortunately, during that time, if it had been flipping just straight forward, but no, I'd kept the bloody court martial waiting because they court martialed the pilot. I kept the court martial waiting for 4 days, so they threw the book at me. If I'd have gone back because I was missing a flipping draft, I wouldn't have missed the draft. I could have caught up with it because it took a long while to get through that. But I wasn't to know that.
So what did they charge you with? I mean, what
absent without leave. And I'd say I got 14 days jankers or 40. So we go. See, the good thing about being a technician at that time was they didn't put you in flipping prison in a glass house like you do in the army. for the very, very sensible reason. What's the point? Put him in the bloody glass house, because we need him out here working. So it was just a case of Janka. They used to have to do a lot more work and then get, peel a lot more spuds and things.
So you got fatigues on top of your...
Well, it's a little bit further than fatigues. But
so what was it? What is Janka?
Well, you have to, first and foremost, you have to parade at Rivale. You have to parade at the flag as they're putting the flag up. You have to peel taters in the cookhouse. You have to do this, do everything under the sun. You haven't got a spare minute to yourself. You go to work, you come back, you start off again, and you're at it in the evening, or doing all the dirty work that the cooks don't want to do, cleaning all the pots up and everything. Just fatigues, but you have to do your ordinary job as well. So that's what Jang
is. Now, another question.
The other thing is that if they couldn't find you anything like that to do, you used to have to dig gardens and things like that. Anything to make your bloody life miserable.
Now, one thing we always ask is, you obviously didn't get married. Now, people seem to have gone two ways. Some people got married early to their girlfriends because they might get killed.
Yeah.
And some people didn't get married because they might get killed, you know. Mm. And some people just weren't going to get married anyway. Now, how did you feel? Did you think about getting married? You obviously.
I thought I was going to get married with this girlfriend. Don't say that too late. But I went overseas, and that was it. While I was overseas, she found somebody else, and that was it.
Did you think of getting married before you went overseas? There wasn't a chance.
It was too. I didn't have a chance. It was too late. I thought about it, but I haven't got round to it, you know. And it's
now, so. Well, there's nothing else about May, the Marine Aircraft Experimental Establishment.
Not really. I say what I've told you about that could have happened in the first or in the second. But you know, I just really.
I think that's fairly clear from what you said. I think there's no problem with that. So now, what's the next thing that happens? And you get news of a posting, do you, or do you get? Well, you go to Blackpool.
No. Yeah, well, I said I got sent overseas. I got kitted out for overseas.
Now, what's the process? I mean, do you get told where you're going, or do you get sent to Blackpool first?
When you get on the boat, you've not the faintest bloody idea where you're going. The only thing is, I think a pudding there got tropical clothing in it or something like that. Going to a hot country.
Down to a hot place.
That's right.
Now, what happened then? That was at Blackpool.
At Blackpool, yeah, you got all the kit. I was kitted out with KD and flipping topies and all the rest of the gear for overseas. For the.
So you knew. Vaguely, you were going somewhere hot, but nothing else.
Yes, that is true. I knew I was going somewhere, except for the fact it didn't always work that. I know people have been kitted out and flipping KD and gone to Iceland, but that's life. But I mean, okay, it was pretty certain I was going out in the Middle East.
Now, tell me about the voyage out. Do you remember the name of the ship?
Oh, God, I should have known it for years. There were two of them, the Dewar and. Oh, God, no, I've forgotten it. I see, I'm getting old, my memory's going. I used to know it. Yeah.
So this was September 1944.
That's it.
And where were you going to? What port? You were going to Egypt. Which port?
We finished up when Sports Ed.
Now, what do you remember about that voyage? You got your tropical kit from Blackpool. And then what happened on board ship?
Nothing. You were just bunged on board and things like having to do PT, running around the deck. You slept in hammocks at night. Ate underneath the hammocks and the tables that were in the troops' decks. You ate from these. The food came up and was put on the decks. You ate from there. At night, everything was cleared away, and you slung your hammocks on hooks above the deck, and that was it. You and the bloke next to you used to bump into each other as it was swaying. I can understand why so many troops. Casualties have hit one.
Were you seasick?
No.
Were many of the others?
No. Well, yes. No, I was never seasick until I got grown up, later on when I went to America. But that's besides the point. No, I was very young, very fit. I can assure you in those days I was 100% fit.
So what happened? Which route did you take out? I mean, the Mediterranean was clear by then.
It was clear then. We went through Gibraltar and past Malta. We didn't stop anywhere. Went straight.
Anything about the voyage? Or?
None at all. It's that sheer boredom.
What about you? What happened when you arrived at Port Said?
Just disembarked at Port Said. They got on trains, went down to Kasfarit, the clearing camp.
Kasfarit. Now, what happened to the clearing camp?
Well, they just dumped you off, put you in flipping tents, and that was it. You just waited until you... I noticed somewhere along the line, it must have been organisation, because they knew where you were, and after a while, they called you out, and you went. I went to a... shipped out to an airfield at El Balar, I think it was.
El Balar?
Yeah, that's it, Balar.
Now, which squadron were you going to there?
I don't know, it wasn't a squadron as far as I know.
You were at the base?
Yeah, one of the real flipping Baltimores. I think it's Baltimores, was it? Yeah, Baltimores, I think they called.
It's Baltimore's Cyclones, the engines. Now, what was happening? What was the structure? What did El Balar, I've never heard of it. What did it look like? What was the base like?
Like hell. It's an MU.
MU meaning?
Maintenance unit. Third line servicing, really. You used to strip them down, and it was just straightforward working like hell on it and drinking tea. That's it. All the time, 24 hours a day.
And what would their base look like? I mean, it was a maintenance unit.
The desert. Everything was done out in the desert. Everything was done out on a flat plain in the desert with a Suez Canal in the background.
And what about your accommodation? I mean...
Tents.
What were the tents like? I mean, you know, because living in a tent...
Under those conditions, you're in the desert. It's just I'd just come straight out from UK, flipping lily white, no brown skin at all. And the place was absolutely, it was on a marsh, and the place was absolutely thick with mosquitoes. So you had to have a mosquito net all night. Just imagine that heat, sleeping under a mosquito net. It was dreadful. And again, the food was lousy.
What was wrong with the food there?
Well, again, it was just totally inadequate. Well, in fact, that's...
Was it English food? Or?
Oh, yes. They always had British cooks. But that was the place where I was saying that there's a swindle. Well, I got there just as it had been sorted out. But half of the camp had got food poisoning. Had food poisoning just before I got there, probably a week, fortnight before I got there. And there was a big inquiry about it. The catering officers came up and sorted it out. And when I got there, it was just getting that little bit better. But what it was happening, it turned out the cooks were selling the food to the local population. And it was just total swindle. So they got court martialed.
Tell me what your daily routine, I mean, I can guess from what you've said, your day's work with hard work and not very amusing.
Get up, eat, work until they can't see it any longer, until 8, 9 o'clock at night.
These are on the Baltimores. What were the Baltimores like to do this job on?
Well, quite honestly, it's very, very few aircraft are any different. They're just another lump of metal with all the same sort of thing. You just have to take different bolts off to get the same effect. This is what it's all about. It's like cars, you know. Once you've seen one, you've seen them all.
You weren't that bothered what they were.
No, it was just...
No particular servicing problems with them, or did anybody... Well,
not as I know, because we were doing third maintenance, so that we would... just changing lumps that we have to change after so often, and that's it, cleaning them up and repainting and doing things like this. So we're just doing a total overhaul on them.
You were overhauling as well as servicing. Yeah, so you weren't just servicing, it's more...
No, it's more like the third line, it's the overall system.
And were there any particular things that went wrong with the Baltimore, or was it...
I honestly don't know. I'll be perfectly honest, I think your father wasn't there for very long.
No, that's right. So you were just basically grafting.
Until I got the proper job.
It's a month, basically.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
I'm asking too many questions.
No, that's it. So it was just a case of I was a fitter there, and I was thrown in, that's it. Change that bit, do that bit. Yeah.
So now your next thing is you're sent to... this seems to be much longer.
This is where I started work hard. I went to Cairo West next.
Now, which unit was that?
This was a number, I think it's number 10. There's what you call a staging post. Now, a staging post towards the end of the, or just after the war. Well, the war was still on, wasn't it?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it was November. You're there from November 44 to September 45. Sorry, the war's
well. It was well and truly, yeah. Ah, yes, of course it was. But it was cooling down further out. The Far East was going strong, that's right. And we were what we call a staging post. Now, a staging post is stuff being flown out by the RAF out to India and far afield, and people being brought back, prisoners, people that had been prisoners of the Japs, being injured people, all being flown back. It was on a route. It was an airline, the RAF's airline, flying them back. And that's basically what it was. I was just servicing aircraft flying through. They only used to come for half a day and get off, and away they go, and that was it.
So this and these aircraft would be fundamentally the things like the Yorks.
Yeah, well, they
and the Skymasters, and then some of the bombers.
Well, when I saw about the bombers, they'd all been converted to passenger, to get them any passengers they used to.
And so, was this a better posting?
I didn't mind Cairo West. I mean, I didn't particularly like it. It's out in the bloody desert again. So I never did like a desert. And you have the very peculiar. So again, you see, all my time in wartime doing the RAF, which is fair enough. I'm not complaining about it. Poor bloody army, I have to fight all the time. It was work all the time. I mean, we used to. I can quite clearly remember we had six, what we call six gangs. There were six teams. We had one day a week off, but not a week. One day, one team. Next week, another team. So we used to get one day every 6 weeks off, and we used to go into Cairo and whoop it up. So for 6 weeks you work non-stop.
That's 6 weeks. That's very hard work. I mean, it's long time to be grafting.
Yeah, I know. This is it. But as I say, poor bloody bloke in the trenches, he's not only grafted, he's being bloody shot at as well.
I mean, that's how you looked at it,
was it? Yeah, oh yeah. This is no argument. It's a totally different attitude in wartime. This is why I get so irritated with people now. Oh, I can't do that as well. Oh, for Christ's sake, shut up. You know?
So you just took it on you?
No, well, that's what we were there for.
Now, what were the nights out like?
In Cairo?
Yeah. Just an idea of it rather than the details of the
Drunken.
So where would you go? What would you do?
There were all sorts of nightclubs and cabarets and things like that in Cairo. But I would tell you quite clearly, and people say these things, they are total lies. They said that blokes used to go with all these women in Cairo. Not on your bloody Nelly. No way. Nobody would touch them.
You worried about VD?
Of course, so you know people that did, and it was absolutely endemic, you know. There's no argument about it.
So for you, it was a drinking and running
just
around?
Boozing. Yeah, just enough.
How much were you drinking by then?
Oh, I don't know, I was probably 12, 14 pints. There was plenty of it about then, you see. I used to drink a lot in those days. But I don't feel bad about it, it's just that was what life was, it was it.
How did you get on?
I went to the pyramids, of course.
Go on, we'll finish on that today. Well, tell us about the pyramids. What did you think of it?
I thought it was terrific. I mean, we climbed to the top, me and my two mates did. I've got photographs of me on the top.
Did you have a guide? I mean, did you go inside?
No. Oh, yes, we went inside with a guide. We went inside and went up to the burial chamber. We went in there, but there wasn't so much known about it those days as there is now. It's all been researched. You know what these tunnels are now. We just, it was a straightforward trip in and all the rest of it. But you were the guides used to offer to take you up to the top, you see, for whatever it was. I don't know what it was.
On the outside?
On the outside, yeah. Climb up the top.
Is this the Great Pyramid?
Yeah. Cheops or Cheops or Chops or whatever you call it. Yeah. But I'll bugger that one. If we pay you, we can get up there and around, as we did. Very young, very fit. Nowadays, they bloody kill me to work. What? It was bloody stupid. I mean, these things about our eye, you're clambering to the bloody top.
4 foot, you mean?
Yeah.
So each step's wasn't a step.
No, you pull it. You got to pull yourself. Give yourselves a chop up to the top.
You get, is it nerve-wracking. I mean,
No, but...
You didn't get a sense of being, you know, you were going to fall off or anything?
No.
What was the view like?
Oh, it's superb. As I say, I've got some photographs that I took on top of it. And of the Sphinx I got. In fact, I keep saying I'll send a picture of the Sphinx into some magazine because it's still got the sandbags under its... Well, not still. It had sandbags under its chin then. And I've never seen a picture of it with the sandbags under. The chin under the Sphinx was supported by sandbags during the war.